Hey, what's up, everybody? This is J. August Richards, Deathlok on Marvel's Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. You're listening to Comic Book Central, where comic books come to life.
Hey there, comic book fans. Welcome to Comic Book Central, where comic books come to life. I am your host, Joe Stuber, coming to you from the Super Secret Lair. In just a few moments, I'm going to be chatting with yet another amazing talent. This time around, from Marvel's Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., actor J. August Richards, Deathlok himself. He's going to be stopping by. Before we get to that, though, I do want to remind you, it is a couple of months away, but episode 100, the Comic Book Central second anniversary special, that is coming up November 7th. Where does the time go? I know. Why mention it now? Well, because just like last year, you get to be a part of the celebration. I want to know your favorite moment from year two of Comic Book Central. There are a lot of them. Was it something from Filmation Celebration? We did a lot of episodes with that. Maybe a bit from one of those rare interviews with maybe the Green Hornet himself, Van Williams, Isis, Joanna Cameron. Did you hear something cool in one of my tributes to Legends of the Superheroes, Birds of Prey, Flash Gordon? How about Howard the Duck? I had two Howard the Ducks here. Maybe something from Shatner. That was one of my favorite moments of the year. I want to know your favorite moments. Email me, joe@comicbookcentral.net. I'm going to read those on the show. You can even send along an MP3. Tell me what you think. I'll play that on episode 100. And just like we did last year, for one listener picked at random from those who reach out to me with their favorite moment, I've got a pretty cool item to give away. I won't tell you what it is just yet, but I will drop a hint. It has to do with the 35th anniversary of a certain film, one of my favorites. So more on that in the weeks ahead. But yeah, cool giveaway, cool episode coming up. We'll play some of those favorite moments. Can't wait to get into that. Send those emails, attach those MP3s, get them to me soon. Also, if you're new to Comic Book Central, welcome aboard. Always nice to welcome new listeners. Nice to see those likes on Facebook, new followers on Twitter. I hope you stick around. I hope you get a chance to check out some of those back episodes of Comic Book Central. If you haven't heard them, they're all new to you. They're in the archive at the website, comicbookcentral.net. Of course, you're going to want to subscribe to the show on iTunes. You get all of the past episodes, where you can let me know your favorite moments once you listen to them. But by subscribing, you're not going to miss a moment of the fun that's coming up. And there's a lot of fun coming up. Programming note, I was going to go online with my two-part adventure at Terrificon in Connecticut. That was just going to be in a few weeks. I simply can't wait to bring it to you. Those episodes are going to be coming up next week. My two-part Comic Book Central at Terrificon extravaganza begins. You're going to get a front row seat to my Q&As with John Wesley Shipp, Kevin Conroy, Mike Carlin, Walt Simonson. Surprise guests drop by. There's some cool events. You're going to hear about those. If you check out the Facebook page and the Twitter feed, I posted a brief video clip, maybe like in the opening minute or so of the introduction of one of those Q&As. You get to see that on there. That gives you a little taste of what's headed your way. Also, be sure to check out the next episode of the IndieCast at theindiecast.com. I've got some Terrificon Indiana Jones goodness headed that way as well. So a lot of good stuff coming up. Tell your friends, tell your family, wake the dog, phone the neighbors, hashtag share the lair. When you're in your favorite comic book store, do they know about Comic Book Central? They're going to love it. Tell them all about it. If you're on the message boards, wherever you are online, share the lair. Those Terrificon episodes are right around the corner. And be sure to stay tuned to the end of this very episode where I'm going to tell you about yet another amazing guest that's set to join me here in the lair in the weeks ahead. ComicBookCentral.net is the website. Subscribe in iTunes. Facebook is facebook.com/ComicBookCentralNetwork. Twitter is @ComicBookCTRL. All the links are on the website. Go check it out. Talk about amazing guests. Man, they just keep making reservations here at the Lair. Today is no exception. You listeners know how much I love me, my Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. My guest today kicked off a classic origin story right from the pilot episode of Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. Take a listen to this, and I'm going to be right back to chat with J. August Richards. Born in the nation's capital and raised in Maryland, J. August Richards was a comic book kid. He loved superheroes, he loved Star Wars, he loved all things geek, and he loved acting. In high school, he was part of the visual and performing arts program. Following that, he was accepted into the School of Dramatic Arts at the University of Southern California. Jay built a solid acting career by guest starring on the biggest television shows of the 90s. But when 2000 hit, it was time for a starring role in Joss Whedon's wildly popular Buffy the Vampire Slayer spinoff Angel, where he played vampire hunter Charles Gunn. And that wasn't the first genre role for the comic book kid. Jay can also be seen in the first season of the CW smash hit Arrow as hitman Mr. Blank. And he's now part of the crazy connected live-action Marvel Universe as Deathlok on Marvel's Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. Deathlok the Demolisher was created by writer Doug Mensch and artist Rich Buckler way back in 1974. He first appeared in Marvel Comics' Astonishing Tales 25. Surprisingly, in four decades, Deathlok never made an appearance in live action or animation. Now, there were some generic Deathloks in an episode of the Black Panther animated series, but that certainly ain't the character that we know and love. When Marvel's Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. premiered, the TV audience and even hardcore comic book nerds like us never saw Deathlok coming. Even Jay didn't see it coming. He was cast as Mike Peterson, an unemployed factory worker and single parent. But as season one unfolded, we got to see that there was much more to Mr. Peterson than meets the cybernetic eye. Turns out he was given some superpowered enhancements and controlled by an unseen force. All the clues were there, however, right there in that pilot episode, especially a riveting scene between Jay's Mike Peterson and Clark Gregg's Agent Coulson, where Jay locks in on the true nature and motivation of the character.
I know you got men everywhere waiting to put me down. I know how this plays out.
I don't. I know you got poison in your system. I know it's burning you up. Mike, the last guy who wore that exploded.
I'm not like that other guy. It matters who I am. Inside, if I'm a good person, if I'm strong.
I know you're strong. Your boy knows it. He needs you to let us help.
You took him. You took my wife, my job, my house. You think this is killing me? All over. There's people being pushed down, being robbed. One of them tries to stand up. You got to make an example out of him.
You bring this building down on us. Will that help them?
That's a lie. All you do is lie. You said if we worked hard, if we did right, we'd have a place. You said it was enough to be a man. But there's better than man. There's gods. And the rest of us, what are we? They're giants. We're what they step on.
I know. I've seen giants up close. And that privilege cost me nearly everything. But the good ones, the real deal, they're not heroes because of what they have that we don't. It's what they do with it. You're right, Mike. It matters who you are.
I could, you know, be a hero.
I'm counting on it.
Well, my guest today can currently be seen on Bravo's Girlfriend's Guide to Divorce, Season 2. It's right around the corner. And, of course, he appeared in the very first episode of Marvel's Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. as Mike Peterson. A funny thing happened along the way in that season. Little did we know he would become the first actor to bring the classic Marvel character Deathlok to life. Jay August Richards joins me now. Jay, welcome to Comic Book Central.
Thank you very much.
I'm speaking to you on, you're in New York.
I am, yes.
You traveled by train. We were going to try to get together yesterday. This wasn't the train in that classic Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. episode, was it?
No, it could have been, though.
What in the world happened?
I didn't know that trains could actually be delayed and that, you know, you could get trapped in a station. And I didn't know that this was real life. I didn't know all that could happen. But yeah, there was a fire on the tracks, apparently. So my train was an hour late, and then there was a fire on the track, so I didn't get to New York. I got there about 3 hours after I was supposed to. I had no idea that would happen if you were taking the train, but I guess it's real life.
There weren't any hydro agents or anything on the train, were there?
There may have been, but I'm not 100% sure about that.
Stanley cameos or anything. You know what? It's one thing. When we do the show, sometimes I talk to actors or producers, and sometimes they know comic books, sometimes they don't know comic books. I was quite pleased to find out that you know your comic books.
I do. Yeah.
You were a comic book kid.
I was, big time. Yeah, that was our thing. That's what we did, me and my friends, and we would go to our local comic book store every Saturday, and if one of our parents wouldn't take us, we would pool our allowances and take a cab. That's how desperate we were. And we'd call ahead of time and make sure they put special issues aside for us, you know, the ones that would sell out. Yeah, that was our thing, man. I got really lost in the comic book world.
Was this Jeppy's comic book store?
Yep, in Silver Spring, Maryland.
Okay.
And, I was a Dungeons & Dragons kid, the whole deal. Oh. So, that was definitely my my influence.
Okay, what were the books that you were reading? What was on your pull list?
So much, man. At the time, I was super into Alpha Flight. As I look back on my comic book collection now, I see that I was very, very into Spider-Man as well. There was a independent comic called DN Agents that I really liked. It may have had a total of 12 issues. I don't remember. They may have had more, but I really, really loved this group called DN Agents. They reminded me a lot of the Fantastic Four. I liked the Fantastic Four a lot. X-Men, I was very into. Those were my... Oh, the new Teen Titans was probably my favorite.
Oh wow! Okay, so you leaning a little more toward Marvel, but you enjoyed your DC books as well.
Absolutely, I didn't have I wasn't a company man back then, you know.
Okay, and as we'll see, your career takes that kind of path. You got a little DC live action going. We'll talk about some Marvel. You're more into the Marvel universe. We'll get into that. What was it about acting? I mean, what did you want to, when you're reading those comic books, what did you want to be when you grew up? Was it acting? When did that first come in, or was it something else entirely?
You know, there was so much that I wanted to do, and it was all connected to, you know, comic books, to Star Wars, to superheroes, to television. I just wanted to be, I guess, a storyteller. I guess that's the best way to put it. Not even just an actor, but a storyteller and a creator of worlds, which is what I thought comic books were and what I thought Star Wars was. It was just like someone creating their own world with their own rules. And, you know, the bigger and the more detailed they could make it, the more into it I was. So I'm still actually exploring what it is that I want to do for a living, even now. You know what I mean?
Exactly.
And it's ironic because it really is coming to a head in my personal life right now, where I am contemplating what I want to do with my life. Isn't that weird? But it's still leading me back to who I was as a kid, like, you know, being so enamored with characters and heroes and stories and worlds. And that is where I'm leaning now. So, yeah.
Okay. So now, had you thought about writing? Had you thought about acting? Was it, what sort of took you into the path of acting? And what were some of those early roles that started to set you apart and get you those acting chops that you needed?
Well, honestly, I have been writing, directing, and producing my entire life. And I probably was doing that before I was acting. I remember when I was a kid, I wrote this play. I was so young. I wrote a play and got two of my friends to be in it. And we performed it for my mom and my sister. And I've kind of been doing that all of my life. But there was no moment where I decided to do what it is that I do. I just was it, if you know what I mean. It's like at the age of 2 or 3, they were putting me on stage to recite the national anthem everywhere we went. So I've always been a performer. I would do plays in school. I got myself on the Cosby Show as a kid. So it's just been in my DNA. There was no moment per se. It's what I've always done.
Okay. And so you started gravitating toward acting, and then one of the biggest, you end up in a lot of genre projects. So like you said, being a comic book guy, being a nerd, that whole thing, that had to appeal to you. How did you get involved working with Joss Whedon on Angel?
randomly. It just came to me as an audition. I just got an audition for this show called Angel. I had never seen Buffy or Angel before. I read the material, which was just the scene that they had written for a character. It wasn't specifically from an episode. It was just some audition material. And I kind of got lucky with my performance because before that, I had seen Meryl Streep on Inside the Actor Studio, and I took a note that she gave on the show, a story that she told. I incorporated that into my audition, and I had never tried something like that before, and it made my audition really pop, and they were very into me playing the part, and that's where we met. We just, you know, I had an instant connection with David Greenwald and Joss. I had dyed my hair red for the audition, and Joss's wife's hair happened to be the same color at the time, so that might have had something to do with it. But no, we just really hit it off pretty quickly, and working together, you know, I just have a bond with those guys, and you know, they were so helpful to me in such an early stage of my career, and I learned so much from them, and they allowed me to explore, and they, you know, wrote the character bigger and better each year, and yeah, so I owe a lot to those guys.
Do you recall what that note was that you took from that interview you saw with Meryl Streep and how you applied that?
Yes. Yes. She said, always examine the opposite of what your character is saying. And that was very important to me because my character in the audition was saying one thing so clearly for the entire scene. And right before I walked into the audition, I heard her voice in my head. And I thought, oh, my God, yes, I'm going to play the exact opposite of what I'm saying. And that makes for really good acting. And it's interesting because I almost sometimes feel like the old school acting that she's talking about and that I learned from in that interview, I almost feel like it's kind of a dying art, especially on television, you know, maybe not cable television. But sometimes like I feel like if I were to bring something like that to some of the auditions I have these days, it would go over like a lead balloon.
Really?
But I think so. I mean, I don't know. The aesthetic is changing, and people like things in a certain, you know, community of television. They like things that are so on the nose, and it's just exhausting. Like sometimes I'll go in for something and I'll try to bring something special to it, and then, you know, the person that I'm reading for will say, well, you know, this guy's really angry. And I just want to say to them, if you think that I didn't know that the guy was angry, then I need to quit right now. So, anyway.
Do you think it becomes more like paint-by-numbers kind of thing as opposed to, you know, bringing those layers in?
I don't know. I think things are maybe so fast and furious these days with technology that, you know, no one has time to taste the ingredients anymore. It's like a fast food machinery we live in Hollywood these days with, you know, with the proliferation of technology right now. It's like no one's savoring the ingredients anymore. I don't know. It's weird.
It's interesting you say that because that now that gives me a different perspective on your performance in Arrow. So before we get to Marvel's Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., we talked about the DC character. You did get to be in the DC universe a little bit, right? I think it was right before. It was season one, Home Invasion was the episode of Arrow. You unfortunately got the version of Arrow, Stephen Amell's Arrow, that was still killing at the time. You didn't make it out.
No, I did not. And I died. Like, I flew up to Canada to shoot it and got on the set and died the very first day.
Wow. Yeah, so, what was it? Paul Blackthorne's line, death by poker. That's a new one.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. Okay. And that was my first day, first scene.
Okay, so that gives me a little bit more insight into your character development there. You played Mr. Blank. He's an assassin. But there's like these little monologues that he kind of has. So was that technique being applied there? Because it's a very creepy take and a very memorable one.
Thank you. And I feel like I feel that that is true because I often will get people will often talk to me about that performance. And yes, absolutely. There are a lot of ingredients that I tried to throw into that I feel like people genuinely tasted, which was awesome. And the ironic thing about that is that I didn't audition for that part. That part was offered to me. And so sometimes I wonder if I would have auditioned for it, would I have gotten it? But, you know, who knows? But I definitely put a lot into that performance. You know, I worked really, really hard on all of my performances. And but that was a very rewarding one because I learned a lot about that character and what it sort of means to be a sociopath. But then I thought, you know, the monologues that you're talking about or the lines that you're talking about, are, he would always comment on the emotional tone of a space or a room.
Yes.
Like he'd say, this house, there's a lot of love in this house, or, ooh, it's very cold in this house. And I thought, who is this person that can emotionally relate to places but not people? And I thought that was just super fascinating. So I kind of approached it from that standpoint. And, I mean, even my best friend called me after she watched it and said, who are you? She just couldn't believe it.
Yeah, you're like commenting on the wood paneling and stuff as you get into the Queen Mansion. Yeah, when you go through it. Now, I don't know if you know the backstory of it, and it could be completely false. I didn't know if this character was originally supposed to be the comic book character Onomatopoeia.
He was originally supposed to be that character, yes.
Oh, okay. So you did. Now, had you known that with that character, or did you come to realize that after you had played him?
Right, only after I played him. I think I read it in an interview.
Okay.
Because by the time it got to me, they had already decided there wasn't going to be that character.
Okay, and I'm kind of glad they switched it up because that gave you a lot more, I think, depth. Yeah, that's a tough character to pull off from the page. There's a great throwdown with you and Stephen Amell in the Queen Mansion to end that episode, too. How much of that, the two of you acting, how much stunt work? Describe that scene
and
shooting
it. Honestly, a lot of stunt work because that was, again, my very first day. That was where we started, was that fight scene. And because I was a guest star and not a regular, I didn't have the days leading up to it to rehearse it. So I had a wonderful stuntman. He was wonderful. And they had been working on it for days before I got there. So whenever you see my face, that is me doing the fight. But when you don't see my face, it's him.
And of course, when he takes you out, that's you.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. So we would jump in. I would jump in for smaller sections of it and do it that way.
You did get to go into a makeup session then with the poker coming through, right?
I did. Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. But I love to do my own stunts, but because, again, I wasn't a regular on that show, I didn't have the opportunity of rehearsal, but yeah.
Okay, well, talking about doing your own stunts, let's get into the Marvel Universe here. How close was your shooting your episode of Arrow and then to S.H.I.E.L.D., and then how did you come to the role of Mike Peterson? Take us through that process.
Gosh, I don't remember. I wonder if I shot S.H.I.E.L.D. I think I shot the pilot for S.H.I.E.L.D. Yes, because, yes, I did one job before S.H.I.E.L.D., which was a show called Emily Owens, M.D. Then I shot the pilot for S.H.I.E.L.D., and then I think I did Arrow right after that. And then S.H.I.E.L.D. came on the air after that. S.H.I.E.L.D. came to me. Again, as an audition, I think as it's relayed to me, they were looking for this character of Mike Peterson. They were auditioning a bunch of people, and they were having a hard time finding the character. And Joss woke up the morning of the final casting and thought of me randomly. And, you know, woke up that morning, called the casting director. The casting director called me in. They called me in at like 11 o'clock to go in at 3 p.m., and I went in. I had to read the scene there. They wouldn't send out any of the material because Marvel was extremely top secret. And I went in and I just had a really instant connection with the character because I really understood his plight. I just really could relate to where he was on a very, very human level. So for me, the performance and the character, I'm not playing a superhero to me. You know, I'm playing a single father with the world against his, you know, with the world at his back. And I just really could relate to his struggle. So
what was the scene they had you read?
They had me read a few scenes, but the most prominent was the last scene in the pilot where my character thinks that he's going to die. And he thinks that his whole world is over. And he basically says, I could be, you know, a hero. And that was the line that I really connected to. You know, I didn't know any other line at my audition except that one.
Wow.
And that line told me everything I needed to know. just about, you know, that line just speaks a world to me. Again, we're back to worlds, right? It spoke a whole universe. I knew everything about the person who says that. And that's somebody who had dreams that never came true. But in spite of everything, he still believes in his dream and in himself and in his dream for his family. And that man was somebody that I wanted to play.
Yeah, it's a tremendous scene when you watch that. I even get the vibe coming. And that scene should have told us everything, because it basically, the whole first season, the arc of your character, it's the origin story of Deathlok, although we didn't know it at the time.
Right, right.
Now,
knew it because my character says it in the first episode, you know, this is an origin story. And,
yep.
And of course, I didn't know what that meant. I just assumed that I would be in the one episode. But again, because it was a pilot, you never know if there are going to be any other episodes. Yeah. So,
Did they indicate to you at that time that they were planning to do more with that character? Not necessarily that it's Deathlok, but hang tight, we're doing something with this.
Yeah, a little bit, but I never listen to any of that, and I never take anything seriously until I show up to work. And even then, you know, someone had said a little something to me while we were shooting the pilot that there was more for the character to do. But again, because it was a pilot and just, I've, you know, been working for so long that I just don't believe anything until I actually do it. So I was so happy to return because I felt like I wasn't done playing the character yet.
When did you first realize he was Deathlok?
Watching it on television. I mean, that's a joke, but it's slightly true. I mean, I found out at the very last possible moment.
Right, but you're shooting like 3 or 4 episodes ahead of what they're airing. So when – I think it's in we joked about that episode at the beginning here with the train, but it's in that episode – or it's at the very end of the episode.
It's the very end. Yeah, the very end. Yeah.
You go in. They show that your leg, your cybernetic leg there, and it says Deathlok. Now,
yeah.
Okay, so you didn't – you had to watch that episode before you knew that?
No, I did know before we shot
okay.
that, but not too long before we shot that, though,
okay.
did I find out, because I was getting fit for the piece that would go onto my leg and turn into the mechanical leg.
Right.
I was being fit for that piece in that episode before I knew that I was being turned into Deathlok.
Okay. When you first found out, what did you think?
I mean, beyond excited, like, it was just one of those moments where, you know, because I've said this many times, if you would have asked me when I was a kid what I wanted to be when I grew up, I would have said a superhero. And I don't mean an actor. I didn't mean an actor. I meant I would want to be a superhero. That would be my job. That's what I thought I wanted to be as a child. So to now be as close to a superhero as humanly possible, playing one on a television show, it was just like a real full circle moment of accomplishment for me where I felt like, wow, I really did make my dreams come true. And from here on out, no matter what happens, like, I did it. Like, I came to Los Angeles to become an actor. I wanted to be a superhero as a child, and I'm doing them both at the same time. Like, this is pretty good. This is pretty much as good as it gets. And, you know, I'm very aware. I think that there's, like, something in the world where sometimes people are not able to experience the blessings of their life sometimes. And I am not that person. I'm almost like probably like not that ambitious of a person because I really experience this job and all of my jobs and my life and my career as like the pinnacle of everything. You know what I mean? So if there is more to an acting career, then it'll be a surprise to me because I am so happy with what it is that I'm doing that I can't imagine it getting any better than this. I know that sounds really strange, but
no, it's perfect. Seems perfectly natural. Were you familiar with the character of Deathlok?
I was not. I mean, I'd probably come across him here or there, but I wasn't like immediately familiar. No.
Cause there's a bunch of different versions too. And it depends on
which one.
How did you,
exactly.
what homework did you do?
Out.
What was the homework?
I did a lot of homework. I started in my own comic book collection because I had all of the issues of the Guide to the Marvel Universe. So I started at D. I went and, you know, read the general overview of the character. Then I started to read individual comics and learned really quickly that there were several Deathlocks with very different backstories than my own. And it became apparent to me very quickly that we were doing our own version. But I realized that there were thematic similarities between all the Deathlocks and the one that we were creating. So I wanted to be true to those. And I wanted to pay homage to the character, you know, to the characters. I wanted to pay homage to those characters as much as I could. And I felt pretty good about that. So I felt pretty good about what we were able to bring from the comic books into this new version that we were telling.
Was there a specific version that stood out to you and that you were able to bring some of those elements in?
There were individual panels that stood out to me. And there's one where Michael Collins is telling his son the definition of what a hero is. And that panel I kept close because he's telling his son, you know, a hero is not about how many guns you have. You know, it's about, I don't want to misquote it, but it's basically where he's telling his son what a hero is. And that panel, just the art of it, as much as the words, informed me the most. And then the cover of Deathlock's debut also really informed me in terms of the sort of Frankenstein elements that I wanted to bring to it and the scowl that I wanted to bring to it at all times. So the art as much as the story informed me.
Oh, perfect. And that, well, and those scenes you're talking about too with your son Ace, played by, is it Ajani Reitster?
Yes, exactly.
Oh, those scenes are amazing. So to talk about that first day on the set, because that pilot episode really sets the tone. I almost got like a hero's vibe from it, where these sort of ordinary people with extraordinary powers, and you've got that scene where the building explodes behind you. And talk about filming that scene with the emotion of talking to your son, and then also just full-blown special effects and superhero work.
Well, that was so nerve-wracking because the explosion was practical. It was a real explosion. Now, CGI was added to it to increase it, but it was a real explosion. And so the building was set to blow, and we could only do it one time, obviously. And I was just petrified of I couldn't mess up, you know, because if I did, it would have just been a disaster. And fortunately, I didn't. And it was pretty much the first shot. So once I got through that, I mean, my first day on the show was so hard because there was that scene, and then I had to climb up the building as well. So that was a huge stunt. I had to jump off the building. Obviously, I didn't jump off the building, but I had to do that part with the young lady. And I knew that, you know, that was a pose that had to be hit. You know, there's a very external element to playing a character with superpowers, you know. It's almost like ballet or like dance. There are poses and positions that have to be hit to precision.
Yeah, it's almost that Iron Man landing that you have to stick that landing as you come
absolutely.
In.
Absolutely.
Yeah, that's almost like iconic cover, comic book cover pose.
Yeah, exactly. So it's very external.
And that's you on the wall. That's you up on the wall.
It's a mix between me and the stuntman.
Yeah.
Part of it is me and part of it is him, I believe. Sometimes I can, you know, you know your own body, but it's very difficult in that thing because it definitely starts out as me for a long time. But then I think there's a part of it that's him, and then it goes back to me. But I did it, nonetheless. I did it. I literally climbed up the wall twice, and I'd been rehearsing that scene for a few days as well. The wall was rigged for me to break through it and, you know, make my own holes, and I'm rock climbing up the wall. So we rehearsed that for 2 days. I had to do that twice. I mean, it was an exhausting day. And then doing the landing part was strenuous as well. I mean, I was sore from head to toe. Well, every day on the pilot, I was sore from head to toe. I mean, I'd tell my friends, oh, I just got to go and throw a couple of punches today, and I would come home sore from head to toe.
They have you on a wire rig, like the old-timey Spider-Man show? Are they pulling you up? Oh, they went old-time on that.
Yep.
Very nice. Yeah, very nice to see that, too. You talk about, you throw the word hero out there in that pilot, and you're always kind of going through that. Your thoughts through the arc of the character early on, before we know where he's going, it it's a lot of people were calling him the villain of the piece. He was villainous. Your thoughts as you were going through and watching those episodes and getting the feedback through season one of people not really knowing who this character was yet.
Yeah, I mean, it was really great writing, wasn't it? I mean, it's like really great writing because the one thing that this guy wants to be, he ends up becoming the exact opposite. And, you know, the word shame just really was powerful, palpable for me in playing the character as he is turned into Deathlok, because the amount of shame that he felt having to do the things that he had to do was what was the most dominating characteristic for me of the character at that time.
Did that bother you that people thought he was the villain of the piece?
I mean, yes and no. I mean, I love that they had a strong reaction. So that's really the most important thing, you know, if people feel something. So some people just saw him as a total villain and they didn't understand that he didn't want to be doing these things. Or maybe they did and felt like he shouldn't be doing these things, even though his child's life was in danger. But everything he ever did was to protect his son. Everything was to protect his son. So I never saw him as anything but a hero or an anti-hero or an anti-villain, as I like to call him. But I never saw him as a bad person. I mean, he was just in terrible circumstances.
Were you surprised at the criticism in the first season by the fans, criticism of the show?
Was I surprised? No, because, you know, it's just par for the course. I mean, you know, these days, nothing gets 100% approval rating. No show is universally loved. I mean, look at the most popular show on television right now, which to me would be Game of Thrones. I mean, I guess you could say it was Empire. But both of those shows get heavily criticized as well. So, no, it didn't surprise me at all.
Yeah, I mean, and it's one of the things we talked about with producer Jeffrey Bell is that you've got all these episodes to go through. It's not a two-hour movie. You've got to let it build. And I think by the time people got to the end of season one, they're like, oh, that's where they were going with it. Oh, okay.
Right. And, you know, I love the fans. I'm very connected to the fans. I've talked to the fans on online and various places. But some of them know, they got to know that they are slightly annoying because sometimes they get a picture from something and they're already rendering a verdict. And it's like, I just don't like criticism without contemplation, or at least, you know, you really should actually see something before you start having such strong negative opinions about the thing. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So,
no, I said it right. I said it right here on this show early on. We were going through season one. I said, you just have to stick with it. It's, they're going somewhere. They're building. It's not a two-hour movie. And then, man, did it pay off with Deathlok. The challenge.
But guess what? But here's the thing, though. Here's the thing. If you stick with it and you still didn't like it, I'm so fine with that. That's cool. There's nothing wrong with that. Yeah. But, you know, I think that you should actually watch the thing that you're criticizing. That's
I think that's good advice. Challenges
for you. Or if you watch and you just give up. That's fair, too. That's fair, too.
Challenges for you as an actor not knowing the backstory of a character as you're playing him, because it's revealed as you go through.
Just like with anybody, right? Like, you have millions of incidents that have happened to you that influence who you are, right? So when you're building a character, you just create incidents that would be relevant to what is going on for the character in this moment. So, you know, all characters, you have to build a backstory. So it doesn't really faze me at all that things happen that I don't know about or that I won't know about. So I just create what I need for what it is that I'm doing in the moment.
Your thoughts when they finally presented Deathlok's suit to you?
The first one or the second one?
There's
two different ones.
Well, the one we got in season one? The one where they released the promo images when you finally, because you were getting pieces and parts as you kind of went through, and then there was kind of like this full body suit when they finally put it on, and it's like, okay, this is Deathlok.
Well, that part is weird because, you know, the character, as he's, I mean, just from the beginning, from the pilot until now, the character, the story has been evolving, as is the character. So where the story is at is reflected in the character's costume and the way that he looks. So when, you know, the very first time we saw me with the artificial leg, some people will say, oh, that's a Deathlock. That doesn't look anything like Deathlock. But it's an evolution. The character is evolving, and things are happening that are, you know, changing the way that he appears. So I loved what I got and accepted it as the reality of the story with itself.
Where do you see the character going in season 3? Obviously, I mean, they're not done with him. You're still playing him. He's in rough shape.
That question I can't answer.
Okay. We know in the episode SOS, we got the codename Caterpillars. Does that mean anything to you?
Nope.
Have you ever read the comic book The Secret Warriors? We do know that they're going to be appearing in season 3. I'm just curious.
I don't know anything.
You come from the Jeffrey Bell School of Avoidance. He was a master at saying everything and saying nothing all at the same time.
He really is.
Where would you like the character to go in season 3? What would, if you were just personally writing it, what development, what emotional beat would you like to see him take on in season 3?
Well, I don't think the character is ever complete until he reunites with his son, or until that is addressed in some way, shape, or form. So that is important to me. I just want to see them be father and son again.
You haven't been talking cybernetic hands with Clark Gregg on the set, have you?
Nope.
Okay. Best part about being Deathlock for you?
The best part is that it's a juicy role. That is the best part. So as an actor, I'm very challenged by the character in a lot of different ways. You know, it's a lot more challenging than it appears, but that's how it should be, right? I mean, it shouldn't look difficult, but it is kind of difficult to play. I mean, on the cover of Deathlock's debut, it says the steel-smashing debut of the world's most offbeat superhero. And that's exactly what he is. I mean, he's a very offbeat superhero in terms of, if you think about Iron Man, Superman, Batman, they all have a very specific agenda that is good versus evil, and they choose what side they're on, and they make choices that are very coherent. But that's not Deathlock. You know, he can be controlled. He has been controlled. These are not his choices. This is not who he chooses to be. He's got a lot of pain, but he's a hero at the same time. So it's a very colorful character. So it's very challenging as an actor and satisfying. Right.
The man knows his comic books. As we speak, you are shooting for season 2, Girlfriend's Guide to Divorce. When can we expect the season premiere for that?
In December. So I believe it will be on in December on Bravo. And this is the second season of the show. And it should be really funny and interesting, just like last year.
Friend of the show, Mark Valley, just joined the cast. He was on Human Target. We love seeing him, so we'll look forward to seeing you work with him. Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. premieres September 29th. How can fans find out more about you? Where are you at online?
So I can always be found on Twitter, at J. August Richards, or Facebook, official J. August Richards, or Instagram, which is my favorite, J. August Richards.
We will look for you on Twitter. We'll look for these other projects. Jay, we're looking forward to season 3 of Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. to see where you're going to take the character of Deathlock. Speaking on behalf of the listeners today, tremendous job bringing this character to life. Fantastic job.
Thank you. Thank you so much. It was a pleasure talking to you.
Thanks so much for taking the time to join me today on Comic Book Central.
All right. Have a wonderful day.
Girlfriend's Guide to Divorce Season 2, that's coming soon to Bravo. And of course, Marvel's Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. Season 3 kicks off Tuesday, September 29th at 9 p.m. Eastern on ABC. My thanks to Jay for joining me today. You can keep up with all things J. August Richards at his Twitter feed, his Instagram page, and his Facebook page. Links to all those sites are going to be posted in the show notes for this very episode at my website, comicbookcentral.net, where you can check out each and every episode of Comic Book Central. And you're going to find links to the show in Facebook, Twitter, and iTunes there on the website. Subscribe to the show, tell your friends, and if you're in iTunes, please leave a review if you would. Again, my thanks to J. August Richards for joining me today. Folks, be sure to email me your favorite year two moment from Comic Book Central. We got a few episodes left, so maybe your favorite moment is in the week's head. Maybe it was in this episode today. Let me know. Click the Signal Me tab on the website. You can drop me a line also at joe@comicbookcentral.net. I definitely want to hear from you. Put my virtual mailman, Willie Lumpkin, to work. He loves dropping off those emails here at the Lair. Speaking of Willie Lumpkin, it was brought to my attention that not everyone might know who virtual Willie Lumpkin is. I think probably a bunch of you do, but if you don't, Willie Lumpkin, he's the mailman in the Marvel Universe. He was, if you saw Fantastic Four back in 2005, the Fantastic Four film, none other than my first guest here in Comic Book Central, Stan Lee, brought him to life. He played Willie Lumpkin in that movie. He's the only comic book mailman I could think of, so when I was doing the email segment, it became virtual Willie Lumpkin. So he's the one that delivers your virtual letters to me. So that's who it is. Speaking of those emails, I heard from Chris Franklin, who co-hosts the Supermates podcast. Chris writes, "Hi, Joe. Great interview with Paul Soles. Thanks for bringing it to us. Despite great work by later Spideys like Dan Gilvezan, I still hear Soles' voice when I read a Spidey comic. To me, the deeper voice of Spidey works as another mask for Peter Parker, along with the smart aleck quips he makes. It boosts his confidence and shields him from the dangers he's facing. The stinger from the Origin episode was a nice touch, and I still think that's the best presentation of the Origin outside the comics to this day. Kudos again on a great interview. Speaking of Dan Gilvezan, my daughter has been watching the old Gem and the Hologram series on Discovery Family. Of course, that's another Marvel animated production, and I've caught Mr. Gilvezan's voice on the series several times since your interview. The effects of Comic Book Central are far-reaching indeed. Keep up the good work." Hey, thanks for writing in, Chris. And you keep up the great work on the Supermates podcast, as always. Yeah, Paul Soles, that interview is definitely one of my favorite moments of the year. A rare chat with the original voice of Spider-Man, Paul Soles. That was fun. If you check out the Comic Book Central Facebook page, I posted the link to that Origin episode from the series. That's there. So check it out. That's the one I talked about with Paul Soles. Really good stuff. And thanks for telling me about the far-reaching effects of Comic Book Central. Nice to hear about that. Let's continue to get the word out. Keep Comic Book Central Nation growing, folks. Hey, some others who are helping to get the word out about the show are the fine folks at the Nutty Bites podcast. They were kind enough to run the Comic Book Central promo on their show. Here's what you can expect when you tune into their podcast.
Hi, I'm Nuke Chas, the host of Nutty Bites.
And hi, I'm Tech, Nutty's regular guest.
Or antagonist. Our podcast is like a call-in show where geeks get to debate topics about speculative fiction.
We don't really debate.
Sure we do. We debate topics such as lame superpowers, the best villains, and our favorite apocalypses.
We more like rant, rave, and then have massive nerd rages.
People call in from all over the world, sometimes minor celebrities, and we've even had some supervillains show up.
Do you ever notice that you never have any superheroes or good guys?
I'm a good guy.
Compared to what?
Antagonist. Not really a guest. Nutty Bites. Nimlast.org.
If you've got a podcast, would like to get the word out about Comic Book Central, I appreciate it. Share the Lair with as many people as you can. Shoot me a line. I'll get you that promo to download. If you can play it on your podcast, that'd be great. I'll return the favor if you've got a promo for your podcast. All right, folks. I think I hear a Quinjet outside. Sounds like Agent Coulson needs a little bit of help from Stuberman, so I'm going to head on out of here for now. But I'm going to return because next week on Comic Book Central, the two-part Comic Book Central at Terrificon extravaganza begins. It is my adventure at the coolest convention in the Nutmeg State. Over the next 2 weeks, you're going to hear from Batman, Kevin Conroy, The Flash, John Wesley Shipp, the head of DC Animation, Mike Carlin, many, many, many more. Then I mentioned a super special guest coming up September 19th, mere days away from the premiere of Heroes Reborn. My in-depth interview with one of the stars of that show. He's also in a little film called Star Wars The Force Awakens. Greg Grunberg, he's going to be here in the Lair. He's going to join me. That's what's coming up. Until next week, you folks have yourself a marvelous week. You keep reading those comics, and thanks for joining me here in the Lair. Comic Book Central, where comic books come to life. This podcast is intended for entertainment and education purposes only. All original content of this podcast is the intellectual property of Comic Book Central and is licensed under Creative Commons Attribution, Non-Commercial, No Derivations 3.0 Imported License. All of the content and names are registered trademarks and copyrights of the respective holders.
Mike Peterson needs to disappear.
You're right. I'm not him anymore. I'm someone else now.
Please. You're juiced, Mike, and you're losing it just like the last guy. It's a disaster.
No. It's an origin story.